Welcome to Season 2 of Forged in Fire, where we explore LGBTQ+ leadership with guests from all over the world. You'll hear as they share how they navigated their journey through crucible experiences to develop into amazing leaders. Forged in Fire is hosted by Colonel Bree Fram and Dr. Liz Cavallaro.
Hi, I'm Bree Fram, an astronautical engineer in the U.S. Space Force. I'm passionate about building the leaders of tomorrow and learning about what the LGBTQ+ leaders of today can teach us.
And I'm Dr. Liz Cavallaro. I'm an adult development scholar and associate professor at the U.S. Naval War College. I'm also an experienced researcher, interviewer, leader development practitioner, and professional executive coach. Please join us as we discover the inspiring stories of how LGBTQ+ leaders are forged.
Welcome to Forged in Fire. Today, we're excited to be joined by two individuals. First, we have Dr. Luke Fletcher. Dr. Luke Fletcher is an associate professor in human resource management at the University of Bath School of Management in the United Kingdom. His research interests span applied psychology and human resource management and include topics such as meaningful work, employee engagement, and diversity and inclusion. His latest research interests focus on experiences of LGBTQ+ people at work. Luke has written for a variety of audiences, including The Conversation and Harvard Business Review Ascend. His work has been published in a number of academic journals, including Human Relations, Human Resource Management, and Journal of Managerial Psychology. Luke is a senior editor at the Journal of Occupational and Organizational Psychology and is an associate editor for the International Journal of Human Resource Management. Luke, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today.
We also have Dr. Sean Pickler. Sean is a professor of management and the director of the graduate program in human resources at the College of Business and Economics at Cal State University Fullerton, and an adjunct professor at the Mirage School of Business at the University of California, Irvine. Sean was the Professor of the Year at the College of Business and Economics at CSU Fullerton in 2015 and again in 2022. He's published more than 80 articles and chapters and books on topics such as diversity and inclusion, performance management, and human resources. His work has been cited over 5,000 times and has been covered by a variety of media, reports, amicus briefs to the Supreme Court, and the U.S. Congress. Before earning his PhD, Sean worked in HR at the American Hospital Association in Chicago. He's consulted extensively with organizations such as Children's Hospital Orange County, Experian, St. Jude, and Word & Brown. He previously worked for Prep Profile Systems, a psychological testing and consulting firm. Sean is also a senior editor of the Journal of Occupational and Organizational Psychology and an associate editor of Human Resource Management. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
We are really excited to have you here because the foundation of the work that Liz and I have done is about how queer superpowers come about. You know, what is it in the experiences of LGBTQ individuals that create these amazing leaders that are so valuable in modern context? And so in talking with you, we're really excited to find some scholarly backing to this work. And as the two of you are the authors of the recent article, The Importance of Authentic Leadership and Core Self-Evaluations for LGBTQ Managers in the Journal of Managerial Psychology, we thought, what a great opportunity to talk about not only your journeys, as we normally do on the show, but how all this comes together academically to show the impact and the amazing things that LGBTQ leaders do in the workplace. So we're super excited to have you on.
So many topics that we want to dive into in relation to your research, but in particular, something that has been really foundational for the work that you've done is looking at LGBT workplace inclusion. So why was it that that was what you wanted to focus on? Let's start with Sean.
Sure. I mean, candidly, part of it is, you know, self-serving. I'm a gay man. So I, you know, as a human being, I want to better understand my experience and the experience of others who are similar to me, right? That's a big part of why I study LGBT issues and organizations and LGBT workers. But I think another broad and very important reason is that you know, LGBT workers face pervasive discrimination. Data indicate that as many as 40% of respondents in surveys that are sexual minority or gender identity minority workers experience discrimination, which could be, you know, being terminated from a job, not getting promoted due to their sexual orientation or gender identity, and so on. And about the same proportion, some surveys indicate above 40% experience harassment and violence based on their identity. And so to me, that seems really, really important to kind of better understand why these things are happening and how to, you know, prevent and mitigate them. And that's a lot of what my work has been on.
Thanks for that. Luke?
Yeah, just kind of adding to Sean, I mean, I'm part of the LGBTQ plus community. And I think from early in my career, I kind of focused more on kind of traditional HR kind of topics and people management topics. But I think as I was kind of growing in my career and my kind of confidence, I was like, well, actually, what's important to me? Where do I want to take my research? What can I learn from what I've already done and kind of think about it from where I'm, where I feel more passionate about and where I can make the most difference. And so part of that was kind of a kind of organic experience of kind of thinking about what can I do to contribute to my community and give back as well. So part of that was looking at LGBT workplace experiences, but I also wanted to focus on the more positive end. So a lot of the research focuses on the kind of more negative side of the coin in terms of discrimination and prejudice and how to stop that from happening, but also how do we then look at to make lives much more in terms of looking at things like thriving and resilience and actually looking at more of the things that make us that connect to our sense of purpose and meaning in our lives. So that's also kind of what was important for me anyway, was also looking at things that could actually be more of the positive end of the spectrum.
We love talking about how LGBTQ leaders turn adversity into impact, make that positive result come from some of those negative experiences. But many times our journeys start with introspection and discovering our own identities. How did the two of you develop your sense of self? And what did that inform in your future work as researchers and educators working on LGBTQ issues? Luke, why don't we start with you for this?
It's a deep, deep question to ask straight away. But yeah, I think part of it is reflecting on who you are as an academic and as a researcher. So part of that process is figuring out where you are at in your research journey and what impact you want to make. So in the UK, I can speak more about the UK context because that's where I've kind of did my PhD and grown. It's very much focused on you as on you and your journey as a researcher, rather than thinking about it as you joining someone else's project or developing your ideas off someone else. Your kind of focus is really about how do you create your own identity through developing your research career. And I think also connecting with people like Sean and others at conferences kind of made me kind of think about who do I want to work with longer term? What impact do I want to create from my research and who do I want to really create that impact with? And so Sean has been one of those particularly inspirational people that I've met at a conference and other arenas where you're kind of trying to get known in the research world and have that genuine connection and think about how do we connect together with people that we can do really great research with and make that impact. Kind of answer your question?
Yeah. I'd love to get a little bit more into your personal journey as well.
Yeah.
You know, in discovering who you were and then how that led to this career as a researcher. Was there a time in your life, you know, where whether that was coming out, whether that was to yourself, to the world, that then put you on this path to do the work you're doing?
Yeah, I think I mean, when I was younger, I always kind of knew that I was going to go to university. I was a kind of like slight loner kid, like focusing on other things than just, you know, what other kids were doing at the time. And I think my insecurity about my sexuality kind of came through when I was younger, and not really knowing how to kind of deal with it and express it. I come from a working class background. My dad's a welder, my mum's a cleaner, so it was a little bit kind of, they didn't fully understand university even. It wasn't necessarily something that they knew much about or understood. But my grandparents were very much wanted to encourage me to go to university and kind of seek out that career that I found was meaningful. In my local area, it was very much, if you were a boy, you had to go to do a trade. It was very trade orientated area, so carpentry, electrics, agricultural work was quite big. So it was very much centered around that, and I was just not interested in any of that at all. So I was I think it was more about a case of feeling uncomfortable in my skin, feeling kind of like I didn't fit in there, both in terms of what I wanted to achieve in my life, but also sexuality and so on. I was kind of one of the only ones to come out in my year group. There was some that came out kind of in other year groups, but I was the only gay, LGBT person at that point. There's more that have come out, I think, now, but at the time it was quite closed. I grew up in an era post Section 28 in the UK, so it was on that cusp of kind of change in schools, away from kind of not talking about it at all, but it was very slow progress. So there wasn't really any teaching done in schools around relationships, other than main focus was really around stopping people getting pregnant, well, stopping women getting pregnant. There wasn't really a focus at all on other forms of relationship or sexuality, so or even gender identity. So it came from a place of kind of feeling, where do I want to go, what do I want to do, and to escape, really. So part of that focus for me was going to university, and going to university that was not near me, and also a university in an area that was gay friendly. So I decided to go to University of Sussex in the UK, which is just outside of Brighton. So Brighton has a reputation for being quite, well, very gay friendly. One of a few kind of well-known cities in the UK. And so I decided to do that. And I think that really helped me develop who I was, and the friendships I had from university have really kind of set me, you know, I'm still really good friends with a lot of people I went to university with, and so that was the course for me that really helped me understand who I was and what path I wanted to follow. And that was more the university path and research, and I was really interested in the research angle of it.
Sean, how about you? How did your journey of getting to know yourself come to influence the journey you're on today academically and professionally?
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate the question. It's an interesting opportunity to reflect on, you know, one's journey and integrate one's experience. And I had all that opportunity while listening to Luke to do that. And I don't know that I did, because I was really intent on listening to Luke. And I love working with Luke. We've done some good work together, have a lot of really interesting projects. So it's an honor. It's interesting. I also grew up in a low-income working-class family on food stamps. And that's part of my experience. It's part of my identity. And, I'm gay. When I was young, I always knew that I was somehow different from my peers. And I think a lot of people who are gay or trans can relate to that. I didn't, you know, as a young person, quite know how or why. And that led me to study psychology, right, in high school. And I think the impetus and inspiration was trying to figure that out, right? Like, who am I? Why do I feel different? In what ways am I different? And as I got older, why are people treating me different, right? Because in high school, as someone who was starting to come out, you know, I was treated differently than my peers. And so I became really, really passionate about the study of psychology. And then entering undergrad, I entered as a psychology major. And I was largely looking at family system psychology. I was in a large project, the longitudinal study of children of alcoholics, which is at Michigan State University, partnered with University of Michigan. So I was very interested in family system psychology. Part of the interest for that on my end personally, in terms of my identity development, was, you know, part of the reason I was able to be successful in certain domains like school was because I had support from my family, support from my parents, and not everybody has that. And that relates, we can get into this later, to becoming an effective leader, because, you know, to be an effective leader, it can be really useful to integrate and have some consistency between your work and non-work domains or your work and personal domains. Any case, that's what I was interested in. And then, you know, I moved to Chicago. I was working, and then I went to business school at Loyola at night. And I didn't think I could make a career out of, let's say, family system psychology. So I wanted to kind of shift towards something that could be more applied, which was, you know, you can call it either human resources or industrial psychology. And when I started looking into that field, I came across research from a friend and colleague, Belle Raggins, who was doing some of the early preliminary foundational work on LGBT discrimination in the applied psychology journals. And I fell in love with it. And I started studying and doing research on and publishing on that topic pretty early in graduate school, actually. And I do research in different areas, but diversity in LGBT has always been one of my core areas.
Thanks so much for sharing that and helping us see into that personal experience and how that has informed really some tremendous work. And in particular, the recent article that you collaborated on, it really touches, Sean, on what you just mentioned about that connection between personal and professional life and home versus career and how that can inform effective leadership. So you recently wrote on authenticity and authentic leadership and how those topics are relevant to LGBT leaders in particular. So we found that article fascinating, and we were wondering if you could share a little bit about how that focal area in particular arose. And Sean, we'll start with you.
Sure, absolutely. I would just mention that this really started from Luke and his interest in sort of the positive side of work, positive aspects to LGBT leadership. So I want to give credit where credit is due. But, you know, I think that the way that we have conceptualized this is that LGBT leaders can face kind of a duality when it comes to authenticity and leading authentically, which is to say that, you know, we can, as LGBT leaders, experience certain challenges, which could be, for instance, being authentic itself, which means to say, for instance, you know, being open, being out as a leader, which very few top leaders are, right? But there can also be, if you will, certain benefits, if not luxuries, actually, which could be, for instance, you know, as a gay person who has come out and who has worked hard to develop a strong sense of the self, a sense of my identity, a sense of who I am vis-a-vis my environment, that might equip me with a better apparatus to be able to support people around me, including my followers. And I think that that's true, right? So I haven't been a manager in industry, but I have been a department chairperson for the Department of Management at Cal State Fullerton. And I've been the director of our graduate programs, and I've overseen in each of those roles, either over 100 faculty or, you know, a staff of some 20 people respectively. And my experience is that, you know, authenticity is about knowing the self, self-awareness, but also relational transparency. And because of my experience of being a gay man who has come out, I really felt more equipped to relate to people in their experiences and on dimensions where maybe some of my colleagues wouldn't have been able to, right? So I had staff, for instance, that were racial minorities. And even though I'm in California, Cal State Fullerton, there's not a lot of, for instance, black staff people. And they, you know, were comfortable coming to me talking about their unique experiences, for instance, being a black employee and what that was like. I'm not black, but I do have an experience of, you know, feeling other than and feeling different from. And that, I think, really helped me to support them. So there's that duality, which with that said, though, I think that our research focused a lot more on the kind of, if you will, benefits to LGBT leaders for being authentic. And so I'll stop there because I think that's an opportunity for Luke to jump in.
Yeah, I think in terms of where I was coming from, I did some piece of work before this on authenticity and of LGBT people in work. So it wasn't leadership focused, but I found it particularly powerful, and it resonated with me and others about going beyond the idea of disclosure. So the focus is a lot about kind of coming out and the kind of dynamics about managing your identity in the workplace, which is really important. So how you might withdraw or engage with being more open or not open to different people in different situations at work. But I want to explore kind of the more psychological aspects around feeling authentic. There's quite a lot of kind of talk around on social media about being your best self at work and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of feeding into that kind of bigger narrative, really. And I was thinking, well, what does it really mean to be authentic at work for an LGBT person, particularly people in leadership positions or managerial positions where they're very much more in the spotlight, having to negotiate different parts of identity and also perform a role. So there's that performativity aspect around it about having to perform at the leader role and what that might mean and look like. And we have all kind of norms and ideals around what a good leader is. So understanding kind of authenticity in that sense of navigating that adaptive form of performance, having to put on kind of this image of a leader and what that might look like, but also try and retain that sense of authenticity and being true to yourself and not losing yourself in that kind of role, if you like. So that's kind of where I was kind of particularly interested in. We decided for this paper to look at kind of more kind of a standard established measure or assessment of authentic leadership, which I personally think misses out some of the nuances of what authentic leadership could be. So part of our kind of projects that we're looking at the moment is doing more kind of interview based studies, trying to get more of that deeper level understanding of what authentic leadership really means and looks like for LGBT people, because as Sean said, it's that kind of duality, that kind of nuance and uniqueness that really makes it kind of particularly special, if you like, or nuanced for LGBT people.
I want to pull a little bit on the thread of authenticity as relational transparency and the coming out process at work, not just to your team as the leader, but the fact that coming out is not a one-time event. It's over and over. And as Luke, as you just touched on, it can almost be performative at times, but also taxing mentally in terms of, do I come out now in this moment, in this opportunity, because it happens so many times in so many different situations. How do you advise, if you would, other LGBTQ individuals who are seeking that authenticity in terms of that performative role in coming out? Is it something we search for a default of, I'm going to be out and open every time, or are there aspects where you might perform differently? And Luke, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think it depends on the individual. So in a previous piece of research, we found that disclosure was linked to authenticity, but more strongly for people where they had this really strong sense that their LGBT identity is the kind of central part of their broader sense of identity as a person. So I think it depends. Some people, they don't necessarily feel that their LGBT identity is just a mix of different things, and that isn't necessarily the central part of it. It might be being, you know, someone's mother or son, or it might be a role, or it might be that their ethnicity or race or nationality. So it could be other things that are more important to them, and being LGBT is just one part of that. So for those individuals, I would say that authenticity is probably not so strong in terms of their LGBT identity. They don't necessarily think of it as being so important. But for those where it's really important and central to their sense of self, then authenticity is particularly powerful. And we found that it was actually more detrimental not disclosing. So kind of being forced to kind of withdraw and not disclose was particularly unhelpful for their sense of authenticity. So so in a sense, it's very much about that person, how they see themselves and how they see their LGBT identity in the mix of all the other different things that make them a person.
Yeah, I think that is fascinating to look at in the terms of how we have a hierarchy of identities, and how I would love in so many cases that I'm A, B, C, D, and E, and then I'm also just happen to be trans. But in so many cases, that ends up being pushed to the forefront by the context. So really interesting about, yes, disclosure is more valuable if it's a core being, but maybe also if it's context related as well. Sean, anything else on kind of the hierarchy of needs or the effects of coming out over and over again?
It's a brilliant question. And I think it's a complicated thing to answer, in that when it comes to coming out, you know, my first reaction is, I think we have to be careful, because not every context is the same. Right, the individual is at issue, and their hierarchy of identity is at issue, but so too is their context. Right, one organization or one department or one manager even could be very safe to come out to, whereas another one wouldn't. And so I think that there's this interaction, if you will, between the context and the person that we really always have to kind of consider. The other, you know, because you mentioned performativity, is that while I would like for myself, or maybe for others, to want to be a role model and to come out and to be visible, it's nobody's responsibility to do that for everybody else, right? So my responsibility is only to myself, and if I'm a leader, to my team, that's for sure. But, you know, there are instances where organizations sometimes use one person, and it could be someone who's gay, someone who's trans, or even someone who's Black, as the exemplar of this identity for this organization. And I have a problem with that. So I think it depends also on levels of analysis, right? Is it individual? Is it organizational? So I don't know if that gives you an answer to your question, but I think it's a complex set of issues.
Very much so.
Yeah, I think I was just going to connect with what Sean said about this kind of idea that in some of the data that we had in terms of interviews that we've carried out, some people get pushed as these kind of poster children of the organization. So they get to know, oh, you're out and visible and you want to make a difference, so we're going to kind of leverage that for the benefit of the organization. So they get wheeled out every diversity event, and some people are very happy to do that, and that's part of their contribution that they want to have, but there's that kind of emotional labor that comes with it, and extra additional workload that isn't necessarily factored in or paid for, or in terms of time or money or extra responsibilities and so on. So it becomes a burden and emotional labor. So it's just bearing in that in mind, that if organizations want to celebrate diversity and inclusion and celebrate individuals within the organization and help promote their stories and experiences, then it's just getting that balance right, so it's not tipping into kind of exploitation, if you like, around their experience.
Speaking of that emphasis on the importance of not only inclusion, but understanding how to utilize and approach inclusion in the best possible way. You also have an upcoming academic book on LGBTQ workplace inclusion. And we were wondering if you could share a little bit about the primary emphasis there, and particularly what is the contribution that you intend for that work to make?
It's going to be on more on the research end of things, so focusing on who researchers that are doing LGBTQ plus research on work, specifically around work, employment, and workplace inclusion. We're trying to focus, the contribution will be trying to get different disciplines together to have a conversation. So there'll be certain topics and areas which will be more specific to different disciplines. So we will probably have some sections that are much more psychological orientated, some that are more critical, sociological, gender studies, some that might be more practical and HR orientated or management focused. But we want to kind of also encourage people to kind of think about their different disciplines together, try and think about LGBTQ plus inclusion in a broader sense. And we also want to focus on impact. So how do we make our research impactful and make a difference in the world, and isn't just about publishing papers, but also providing allyship and support to people on the ground. So that's, you know, why I joined this podcast. I felt this was a great opportunity to have a conversation and think about how we can connect with people think about how we can actually make a difference on the ground, rather than just we've done this piece of research, isn't it amazing kind of thing.
Absolutely. As an academic, I both emphasize with the wanting to get to things but getting swamped with teaching, but also more importantly that bridge between the scholarship and the practitioner, and finding ways to connect with those real actual humans in those workplaces that we're studying. So I really appreciate that. Sean, anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, it's early stage. I think that, you know, one of the key contributions is what Luke said, which is to bring disparate authors and disciplines together to form a coherent story about what does LGBT inclusion look like, broadly speaking from business, broadly speaking from work, broadly speaking from employment. We have brilliant economists out there looking at wage disparities between, you know, gay men versus heterosexual men, trans people versus cisgender people. It's great work. We have people doing work on interpersonal discrimination, which I've done some of that. The question really becomes, how do these things all come together and how do they present a coherent story? And what should we do about that? Right? And that hasn't been done yet. And so I think, as far as I know, so that's kind of, I think, our intention.
Sean, you've talked about the fact that both in your personal capacity and in your research, that people are more likely to follow leaders and perform well when they're challenged and supported. What stands out about this among LGBTQ leaders that you've studied or observed? Are they better at that than others? Or is there, they're just as likely or unlikely to be a good leader as anyone else?
Sure, great question. Yeah, I think if you look at the leadership literature in general, and maybe especially the leadership literature on transformational leadership, we see that setting really high expectations, you know, a challenge orientation with a high level of support, which you could call support itself. You could call it individualized consideration, which is a specific dimension of transformational leadership, which means to figure out each of your followers, kind of who they are, how they're unique, what motivates them, and then work with them one-on-one in a unique, you know, uniquely supportive way. When those two things come together, teams perform better, leaders feel more satisfied with their role, team members feel more satisfied with their leader, and so on and so forth. And so regardless of the role that I'm in, if it's a leadership role, my role as a professor, even with friends, I try to do both, really. Like, I'm always thinking about this, like high expectations, but high levels of support. They're mutually inclusive. And when it comes to, you know, LGBT leaders, or maybe any leader with a stigmatized identity, that they've had to grapple with across the life course. I think that I'm not sure how that relates to a challenge orientation or just setting high expectations, but I do feel, and this is not empirically based, this is just my own experience, that people with stigmatized identities, because of the discrimination that they may have faced, because of the harassment that they may have faced, are on a somewhat different, if not better, footing to be able to relate to others when they're having those similar experiences. And many people have those experiences, right? So in other words, I think that I'll say it this way, LGBT leaders, I think, are somewhat uniquely equipped to provide certain kinds of individualized consideration. That, I think, exact issue has yet to be studied. Luke, maybe we can do that next, but that's my belief, you know, philosophically. Whether that's true or not empirically, I'm not sure.
That's a big piece of what we've tried to look at and find out, why is that? Why are LGBTQ folks and their developmental experiences, their crucible moments, so focused on making them transformational leaders and to provide that individualized consideration that you talked about? And what we seem to have found is that you just get this sense of, I went through some terrible things and I don't want you to have to go through some terrible things, rather than that hazing environment that so often exists where people say, I went through some terrible things and I feel like I deserve this now, so I'm going to make you go through all those terrible things. But yes, we would love to see some more academic backing for that anecdotal thing that we see over and over again. So if you two can turn those anecdotes into data, we would be thrilled.
Let's do it.
Yes, absolutely. You can sign me up as well. I'll join the team. So we've talked about the nature of authentic leadership, transformational leadership, some of the skills and capacities just around connecting with people, understanding people's needs. Luke, you mentioned that you're proud of being able to work with some amazing people on LGBT plus inclusion, and that you've had a chance to speak with a whole range of LGBT people through your research. What are some of the other things that you've learned about LGBT leaders? What are those other skills and capacities you've observed in those folks in your work with them?
Yeah, good question. I think there's a real sense of resilience, particularly at the moment. There's a lot of political stuff going on in both the UK and US and other countries around LGBT identities, particularly around gender identity at the moment. And I think there's a real sense of trying to come together and be resilient and be allies to each other, because across the whole LGBTQ plus spectrum, there's a whole range of different identities and people's experiences, and we need to try to come together and be allies to one another and support each other through what feels like a particularly challenging political situation, and to try and combat some of the misinformation around. So I think from speaking to people, there's a real sense of trying to come together and be resilient and lead by example, and not try and get too caught up in the kind of negativity that's surrounding this space at the moment. And speaking to people that are running, so at the moment I'm doing a project specifically around trans and non-binary inclusion, and trying to work with stakeholders in the UK context who are trying to do trans and non-binary workplace inclusion. And I think part of that conversation is trying to bring people together to have that conversation. How do we as researchers, how do they as people trying to navigate this situation, work together to kind of be resilient and push through this particular difficult time at the moment? So resilience is one of those things. Another thing I think is being really confident and secure in yourself. So knowing, I think a lot of LGBTQ plus people have had to go through that process of really understanding themselves and understanding what they want. And so there's a clear sense of, we know what we want. We know we want it to be better. We know what we want in terms of inclusion, and fighting for that focus, really, and trying to bring together that kind of lived experience, really, about what it's like, and try and demystify some of the misinformation that's being bounded around at the moment.
So, Sean, I'll ask you to expand on a little bit of that, particularly the demystifying the experiences of LGBTQ individuals, because we can have this research that you are doing. We can have the stories of LGBTQ folks doing incredible things and proving themselves over and over again. But so often, the people that need to hear that have their hands over their ears. How do we take this data or these stories and get people who need to hear it to be willing to grapple with it? How do we make those connections that we need between the LGBTQ community and much of the rest of the world?
Yeah, great question. So, I mean, the way that I'll approach that is through the work I do in consulting. And I do a lot of work in consulting around training and development of frontline managers and executives, diversity training, for instance. And, you know, I work hard at this exact issue. So I'm glad that you asked. And, you know, so I present a talk which is called Diversity Factor Fiction. And largely what that is working through why discrimination occurs, why discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity occurs, or any other identity. And part of that is because of stereotyping. And so when I go through that workshop, I help people understand that whatever their identity is, even if it's a cisgendered white man, under certain conditions, you might experience discrimination. And I give them an example. So I published a study in the Journal of Applied Social Psychology more than 10 years ago. My colleagues and I looked at hiring decisions among a sample of people who had master's degrees in HR, who were hiring managers, who were trained to not discriminate. And we asked them to make hiring decisions for different candidates. And we found, for instance, for the job of a registered nurse, gay men and straight women were preferred, but not lesbian women or straight men. The vice versa was true for a sales manager. So the point with that study is, depending on the job, you could be discriminated against because you're straight, even. And so I think that the more that I can help people understand that the reasons why discrimination occurs, like stereotyping, confirmation bias, availability bias, helping them to understand these cognitive errors that we all have and how that impacts us, the more people can relate to it. I think my experience, if I'm being candid, is if I can make it more personal, more relevant to them, regardless of their identity, the more, if you will, sympathetic they are, actually, to other identities and other issues.
That really highlights an area that has become really interesting and kind of a surprise in our work, is to look at all of the many shared experiences and kind of similar elements of life that, in the context of this work, that all individuals can learn from and benefit from the developmental experiences and journeys of LGBTQ individuals. Transition is an example that we've looked at a lot, in that everyone has some version of transitions in their life, and the way in which LGBTQ individuals evolve through these kinds of things in their life can inform all of us and help all of us. And really wanting to emphasize understanding that personal relevance, no matter who you are, no matter how different you individually may think you are from this particular community, there's something that you can learn, and there's something that really connects all of us. Is that something that you have observed in your work? And what is it about that is important? How about Luke? We start with you.
Yeah, I think in terms of thinking about how you connect with people, I think one of the issues at the moment around gender identity in particular, and trans and non-binary identity, is that there's this kind of moral panic that's being set in about who they might be and what are they doing and why are they doing it. So there's kind of this kind of this, it's all blurry, it's all gray, it's all like we don't really know, we don't really understand. So helping people, I think, on that path of understanding and trying to be respectful to every individual's journey around around, for example, transition, I think helping people kind of because they might not have actually they might not have actually had a conversation directly with a trans or non-binary person before. So it's also helping people on that journey of learning and also trying to demystify some of the kind of negative headlines around at the moment. I think trying to humanize the stories is really important, and humanity and human, you know, we've got so much conflict in the world, and some of the narratives get pulled into a very dehumanizing narrative. And I think if we can pull all these things back to humanizing people and people's experiences and try and connect it with maybe other people, cisgender and heterosexual experiences, and trying to connect it with some of their challenging experiences would be a good path forward as well. So for example, the challenges around navigating maternity leave and parental rights, and you know in America we've got the Roe versus Wade stuff going on, like trying to connect with some of the challenges and issues that heterosexual and cisgender people are experiencing as well, and trying to get that solidarity between these different groups. Because I think what's happening is politically everyone's being very divisive and pulling us all apart, and actually there's more that brings us together than what is pulling us apart. So trying to get that connection point between us.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. Sean, anything else on that?
I think it's the right question, right? So, you know, all of us, regardless of our sexual orientation, gender identity, and so on, are going to, especially across the adult life course, have situations where we need to decide to disclose or conceal, and periods of life where there's big transitions, right? So when I think of this, I think of, for instance, getting a cancer diagnosis. Am I going to reveal this? To whom am I going to reveal this? When and why? Those are hugely important decisions, just as it is for someone, for instance, who's trans, deciding whether or not, you know, to come out. And transitions is the same, right? So it could be, you know, my experience, I'll be a little bit vulnerable. In the last number of years, I transitioned from being married to not being married, to being divorced. Most of my colleagues, most of my friends are married. That's a difficult transition to make. And so I could talk to a friend who's trans and ask, what was your experience like? A different transition, of course, but the experience still could be relevant. And I think that the more that we're asking each other these questions and having open and honest conversations, at least with persons whom we trust, you know, that can be a beautiful thing.
There are so many beautiful things we could get into and would love to get into with you, but I'm going to ask one question to wrap up, and it's a big one. What's the future of queer leadership? In 20 or in 50 years, are we still going to be talking about it? Or is it just leadership in general at that point? What does it look like to you? And Sean, we'll start with you.
Yeah, great question. I'll tell you what my hope is. My hope is that, candidly, we're no longer having this conversation, which is to say that you know, queer leadership has become normative. You know, we know, for instance, among the Fortune 500, Tim Cook came out, I think, in 2014, the first chief executive officer of a Fortune 500 company. There are now three, but only three, openly gay or trans leaders of Fortune 500 companies, which is, you know, very narrow margins. And this is not disparate from or unique to sort of industry writ large or organizations writ large. In other words, having openly gay, openly trans, openly non-binary leaders is unusual. And my hope is that in 20 years, people are much more comfortable with that, both people who are LGBTQ plus coming out, but also others who are not supportive of their coming out, right? My hope is that that, you know, we've moved past even having it be something so separate.
Luke, how about you?
I also agree with Sean that I think trying to encourage and support more and more people being going into leadership from diverse communities, particularly LGBT, and not having to have this conversation all the time about you know, the barriers and the issues that, that LGBT people are facing. But I also hope that there's more of an encouragement to understand that LGBT people in leadership can bring something of unique value and experience, like any other kind of diversity group, if you like. But there's something unique and special about LGBTQ plus people and what they bring to leadership. And I think having that kind of better understood and that enabled more, that's my hope as well.
Well, we also think that having something to talk about the unique and special qualities of LGBTQ leaders is phenomenal and want to share those stories. So thank you, Dr. Luke Fletcher, Dr. Sean Pickler, for joining us today on Forged in Fire to explore some of that academic underpinning and talk about those hopes for the future. We're excited to see where this work takes you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. The views and ideas expressed by the hosts and guests of this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the organizations or institutions they represent. Forged in Fire is a collective effort brought to you by a fantastic team of passionate individuals. This podcast is produced and engineered by Frida Castellanos, media production by Christina George, operations by Imogene Thomas, and communications by Chelsea Asplund. Brief Ram serves as executive producer and hosts the show along with Dr. Liz Cavallaro. But we couldn't do this without the inspiration provided by LGBTQ plus leaders around the world working hard to build a better future for all. For more information, visit our website at forgedinfire.org.